Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is totally free and available to you all with new episodes every Thursday via PodcastOne.com, Apple Podcasts, and of course, now totally free and available via Spotify. No subscription needed to Spotify. Just go ahead and grab it in the podcast section. However you listen, however you connect each and every week, thank you for doing so. And I hope wherever you are in the world, things are okay by you. And that's about as best we can hope for in pandemic land being okay. I mean, really, it's incredible how long this is continuing. You are getting this podcast if you're listening on post day on the 16th day of April 2020. And here in New Jersey, where I live, we are still looking at lockdown going for at least a couple more weeks. Los Angeles, I know, going at least till the middle of May. And honestly, at this point, folks, I don't think we stand a chance in hell of seeing live concerts on any real level until September, October at the soonest. You know, if there's stuff on the books for June, July, I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. I mean, maybe very small club stuff. Maybe some aspects of the economy hopefully opening sooner than later, but it is just not boding well for public gatherings of large groups in what would be a concert or live entertainment event. And they're even talking about sports being played without anybody in the audience. I mean, I think we're going to be in this mode in some way, probably until, you know, probably until there's a vaccine, which could be anywhere from a year and a half to 2 years from what they're saying. And that's the only way that we can really get back to total normalcy. So hopefully sooner, hopefully there's advances, hopefully, you know, I just think everybody has a different idea, and even the medical professionals, different opinions. I had a doctor on my Sirius XM show, a very noted doctor who I met on a plane. He does work on CBS on TV as well. His name is Dr. David Agus. And he came on my radio show. I may podcast that to you next week. But he came on my Sirius XM show, where, of course, all the interviews you hear on this show originate. And he was saying that, and this has been put out there by a number of different people, that the idea of potentially having some sort of card or something that says you are immune to the virus could be a viable thing in order to get people into public gatherings. And then, you know, I got a lot of blowback from people via email when the doctor said that on my radio show when it aired about a week and a half ago, saying, oh, that's an infringement on civil liberties and all that. I don't know. I don't know what the resolution is. I think everybody's going to have to bend a little bit. Everybody's going to have to cooperate as best they can. And, you know, I feel for the people that are suffering from work from all this. It's just crazy. Not just the entertainment industry, but across the board. I've been very lucky personally in that, you know, I do broadcasting for a living and I do radio for a living predominantly. And I am able to work from home and deliver a radio show every day on Sirius XM. And that's been a big plus for me to continue to generate that paycheck. But I've taken my fair share of hits as well with, honestly, revenue being greatly down on a lot of advertising platforms that I make a percentage of the money from, including this podcast. I have a terrestrial radio show, advertising revenue being down there. So it's a crazy time for everybody, and some are weathering it a little bit better than others. But I mean, me personally, I've been okay, thankfully. And I appreciate those that have reached out and checked and just checked in with me. But you know, I've got a house big enough that everybody has a little bit of their own space. And, you know, family of four under one roof, so there's that. And then, you know, I'm able to work every day. And I've actually been busier than I normally am, even in normal times, just because I'm producing 8 shows a week on my own and without the benefit of a producer or anything like that. And it's been a little bit of a change. But again, I'm not complaining at all. I'm lucky that I have what I have and have the opportunity to continue to work. Many others not nearly as fortunate. So whatever situation you're in, hope you can find a way to endure and get through it. And I hope we are sincerely on the other side of this. I can only speak for the New York, New Jersey area where I live, which was the epicenter of the virus in America, at least, for the last 3 weeks or so easily. And the vibe here, although incredibly serious still, is that it may finally start to, we might start to, as they say, go on the other side of the curve, and things may gradually start to get better. Although Easter was like the worst day for people passing away. So it's just a crazy, crazy world we're in now. And I send you all my very best and hope you can endure it as best you can. You're hearing enough about all this from other places. Let me get to what I do, which is talk rock. Today we have 2 great interviews. Last couple of weeks, if you noticed, I'm giving you a little longer podcast. I'm doubling up on interviews where I can, trying to, you know, provide as much alternative to the news content as I can. I am on Sirius XM every single day still doing live. Well, not live. That's the one difference. I can't work live right now, but I am pre-recording and airing brand new shows every day, Monday through Friday, 2 to 4, 10 to midnight Eastern, as usual on Sirius XM channel 106 volume. So be sure to you know, check that out. And the Sirius XM app, which is available to everyone in the US and Canada, is now free listening to everyone until May 15th. So if you don't have Sirius or XM and you're in America or Canada and you always wanted to hear my shows, you can download the app and listen for free until May 15th. Just dial up my show, Trunk Nation, or Eddie Trunk, or whatever. You can listen on demand or to the stream as the shows air 2 to 4, 10 to midnight Eastern daily. Been some great guests on there lately, and some of those guests I'm bringing to you, of course, here on the podcast a week or two after the interviews originate live on that show. And that's where the 2 interviews I have for you today come from. First up, Lizzie Hale of Hailstorm. Now, what happened is I've got this recording device that enables me to record phone conversations just like if they were calling into my radio show. And I am now able to connect with a bunch of artists and have some interviews and some new content and really checking in with a lot of artists, asking them how they're doing, finding out how the quarantine is impacting them and whatever else they want to share with me. So had some great in-depth, very casual conversations. I've got a great one coming up with Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony. I'll get that to you next week. That made a lot of news when it aired. But this week, I'm going to bring you Lizzie Hale of Hailstorm first, followed by David Ellefson of Megadeth second. The Ellefson interview was done prior to a charity online event that Ellefson did this past Saturday. It was some charitable component where he enlisted a bunch of different artists and people to come on a sort of a telethon, a streaming telethon. What we have happening now, obviously, is so many people doing these sort of, you know, streaming performances, which is all great and it's all coming from a great place. I think the challenge is everyone is doing them now. Anyone can do them. And just trying to get traction and eyes and ears and people to know or care about them is probably a bit challenging. But David did one for a great cause, and that was the main catalyst for him checking in with me, although we touch on Megadeth's first tour with Dave since he had cancer and a bunch of other great stuff. David Ellefson, just a great guy. Known him forever, and it's a fun conversation. That's second. First up, Lizzie Hale of Hailstorm. Same deal. Lizzie just checked in. We were texting, and I said, hey, you want to come on and say hello to the fans? She said, yeah. And she's been great through this whole thing if you follow her social media, because she's really been connecting with people in a lot of different ways online, keeping in touch with her fan base. And she spent a good amount of time with me, as you're about to hear in a matter of minutes, just talking about everything. The virus, Hailstorm, the future, the quarantine. Just a wonderful person, amazing talent. And I got to thank her because, as you're about to hear in the interview, I bring up this custom guitar she has. And shortly after this interview aired, she sent me one of those guitars, which is incredibly kind and generous of her to do. I don't know how to play guitar. I don't know how much longer this quarantine is going to last, but one of my great regrets is not learning how to play. So maybe if I have the time, like I said, I've been really busy, but if I have the time, I will be able to dedicate that to possibly taking some online lessons and learning. Who knows? But she sent me her beautiful custom Explorer, and I thank her for that. Had no idea that was going to happen. So first up, Lizzie Hale of Hailstorm, followed by David Ellefson of Megadeth. A nice long double dip interview for you this week on the Eddie Trunk podcast. Remember, connect with me on Twitter at Eddie Trunk, Instagram at Eddie Trunk, fan page on Facebook. EddieTrunk.com is my official online home. I mean, there's so many things I wanted to get done during this stay at home thing, but I'm not getting any of the ancillary stuff done because I've been focused on getting you guys shows and podcasts and my FM show and all the things I got to do every week. So nothing has slowed down for me in terms of work, thankfully, but there's so many things I was hoping to get around to that I haven't. But I am able to get you new content still every week here, and I thank you for checking out the podcast and spread the word. You know, people looking for stuff to listen to or check out, make sure you tell them about this podcast if they're not already hip to it. And as usual, it will not cost you a penny to listen to it. Hey, let me tell you guys though real quick before we get to our interviews about Raycon earbuds. They are wireless earbuds, and they are really, really very, very cool. Whether you're working from home like so many of us are, maybe you are trying to figure out some fitness and listening to stuff and want some great sounding earbuds while you work out or whatever you want to do, or you just want a good, affordable, comfortable, sounding great pair of earbuds, you got to check out Raycon. The newest model, the Everyday E25 Buds, they are the best ones yet. They've got 6 hours of playtime, easy Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a very compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. One of my biggest problems with earbuds is they're not comfortable. I don't like the way they feel in my ears. They just don't feel like they fit right. They always feel like they're going to fall out. Not the Raycons. They've got all these adjustable little pieces you can put on the end to make sure they're as comfortable as possible. They're stylish. There's no dangling wires. They're really great. Now it's the time. What better time? Especially if you're in lockdown. Get yourself some earbuds from Raycon. Latest and greatest. You get 15% off your order. That's right. 15% off an already great price. All you got to do is go to the website buyraycon.com/trunk. That's buy Raycon, RAYCON.com/trunk. Buyraycon.com/trunk. 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Once again, buyraycon.com/trunk. Be sure to check them out. All right, we got first up Lizzie Hale, followed by David Ellefson. Enjoy the interviews on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
podcast coming. It's called Theory.
Don't you know?
This is Theo Rossi. Our world is changing. For many of us, it'll never feel the same. The important thing to remember is that we are all in this together. And that's some of what I want to talk about on my new show, Theory. We're going to discuss the things that no one ever does. The real talk, the sacrifice, and the struggle that everyone goes through. My life has kind of put me in a unique position to see things honestly. This is Theo Rossi, and my new show, Theory, launches on April 8th, officially on Spotify, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Okay, two interviews for you this week on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Coming up a little bit later on, a lengthy conversation with David Ellefson of Megadeth, talking about all kinds of stuff. But before we get to David, first up, Lizzie Hale of Hailstorm. I love the latest Hailstorm album, Vicious. It is my favorite record by far that they've made in their career. I talked to Lizzie during quarantine about what she's been working on, the next Hailstorm record, her featured guitar, and a bunch of other cool stuff. Enjoy Lizzie Hale, first up on this week's Double Dip on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. I appreciate this lady taking a few minutes out of her schedule to chat with us here. It is none other than Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm. You know, it's funny, Lizzie, because I'm talking to a few different artists and I'm saying taking a few minutes out from their schedule because I'm used to saying that. And then they all kind of respond with the same thing. Well, it's not like I'm doing anything anyway.
I should be thanking you for filling up my schedule a little bit. You know, it's tough. Like when you're, I mean, the hustle has always been real for us and for me. So the fact that, you know, all, you know, touring has stopped and going out and performing has stopped. And, you know, a lot of the things that I would normally be hustling and doing, are different now, you know, and so we're all just trying to find new ways to connect. And, one hugely positive thing though, is I see a lot of, at least in our fan base, a lot of unity and a lot of it feels like we're just all going to have a different perspective when all of this blows over. Like all of the petty differences, all of the, you know, whose side are you on politically? Like no one's talking about that right now. Everybody's just, hey, how you doing? Right. Checking in. Everyone's checking in on everyone's mental health. So it's kind of there is some positivity that I am seeing in this trying time, which is a beautiful thing to be a part of, you know.
Well, you've always been super connected to the fans. The whole band has, but you especially. I mean, I notice even in the last couple of weeks with all this madness going on, you've been real active talking to fans on Twitter and various social media and stuff and just trying to keep positive messages out there. I mean, that's important. And I mean, you have a lot of fans, of course, that look up to you and respect you and all that. So keeping those positive vibes and keeping everybody kind of on the upswing and optimistic, I think, is a really important thing right now.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, you know, because everyone's kind of locked in, I talk a lot about mental health and I have my own things that I battle. But it's a crazy thing to try to exude that, hey, we actually are all in this same boat.
Yeah.
Because it can feel very isolating and it can feel very, you know, lonely and confusing, and you're knocked right out of all of your normal life stuff. Everything has to be adjusted. Even like to me, like even the simple thing like cooking right now is like, I love to cook, but now like everything that I have, because I've kind of stocked up on a lot of frozen food, is just like, okay, now it's a new routine. Yeah, I gotta like take the stuff out of the freezer and all that stuff, and like I can't like do the fresh stuff that I normally do. So even like small things like that. But I don't know, like for me, you know, I've begun trying to get a new routine going. Luckily for us, we had already kind of staked out this time to write another record. So that's kind of all I'm pretty much filling up my schedule with, besides, you know, little side things. Like I started painting again and I'm going fishing, you know, but other than that, you know, it's like, it's interesting because, you know, for all of us, I mean, there are bands that have had to, you know, cancel their tours. We had a small run in April that has already been postponed to September, And hopefully we'll be able to do that. So it's hard to predict what the world is going to be like after everybody gets back to normal. I don't know if there is a back to normal. So it's a strange time.
Well, that's just it. I mean, the problem is nobody knows what the new normal is going to be. Nobody knows when this is really going to start up again. I mean, what's really weird for me is obviously some big festivals got blown out in May, and that was like, okay, wow. And then, like, just the other day, I saw Roger Waters cancel a tour that was scheduled to start in July and run through October.
Oh, wow.
And push it into next year. And I'm like, whoa, they're already killing stuff in July. But then you talk to people, and then I have a friend of mine that manages a performing arts center here in New Jersey, and he's telling me, yeah, we're set to start up again June 1st. And you hear people like, well, maybe it's Memorial Day weekend. So there, nobody really seems to know what the plan is. I had John Five on, and I was talking to him, and I said, you know, what do you think is going to happen? I said, do you think we'll ever be shaking hands again at gigs, or will artists be doing meet and greets anymore? And John's thing was, he thinks we've seen the end of movie theaters. He's like, I think the future is movies just coming directly to your house. I don't think anybody's going to movie theaters anymore. So everybody's got like their, I don't know. I'm just sort of optimistic in a way that I think once this does clear, that I hope everything comes back really, really quickly. Like, I think people are going to be really excited to get back out there again. I hope everybody has some money to do it, given what's happening with jobs and the economy.
Yeah.
But I just feel like once we sort of get the all clear, I'm hoping and cautiously optimistic that things get back to normal sooner than later.
I think so, too. And I think as far as, you know, the touring world, yes, depending on, you know, your level of scare with meet and greets and all of that, you know, it's either going to be, we're going to see maybe less of those, or just higher caution. Like, okay, you know, if you're shaking, maybe we're not shaking hands anymore. Maybe we're just taking pictures and have a lot of Purell. Maybe there's that. But also I feel like there's going to be a lot of really good music that comes out of this too. And
right.
I think that everyone's going to kind of have to do on each end, do our part. Like, I think the bands, we're going to have to, you know, do some cheaper shows, maybe some free ones, like just to get that ball rolling again. And maybe it's more about packages and like have like five or six bands on the same bill, you know, everybody helping each other out. It's interesting because it's very, like what you said, I don't think that it's going to be the same ever again, but hopefully it'll actually be a little better. You know, maybe everybody just gets a different perspective, because for so long now, you know, not just our in our country, but the world, like everyone has been so incredibly divided on all of these different subjects. And now this is like this mass distraction, and it's also something that we're all in the same boat. So, and we all understand that it has to be all hands on deck for us to get through this, you know? So everyone's like trying to do their part. And I don't know. I feel like maybe we're looking at a sunnier world at the end of this. And that's what I'm choosing to believe anyway.
No, I don't think you're crazy thinking that at all. I really don't. You know, you said something interesting. Like, so a lot of artists that I talk to are telling me that they've had a lot of dates canceled or postponed because of this. It sounds like for Hailstorm, it was just a handful. And like you said, you'd carved out this time to work on the follow-up to Vicious, which is my favorite record Hailstorm ever made. So I think you got a high bar as far as a follow-up, and I'm really excited to hear what you're doing next. But how has this impacted that? Have you been able to write? Have you been able to record? I mean, what sort of impact has this had positively or negatively on the creation of the next record?
Well, I'll start with a positive first. As far as that goes, I've spent probably the last 4 years, I bought a house 4 years ago here in Nashville, and I've been working toward just making it into kind of a fortress. So I have a studio in the basement with the vocal chain that we actually use for Vicious. So I can still work from home. I can still guest with people. They can just send me the files, and I'll do everything from home. The negative is that we were actually supposed to get together with Nick Raciolinus and start some pre-pro. So that isn't necessarily going to be happening anytime soon, but it just, I'm taking it as more or less using it to my advantage, you know, because, okay, now all I have to do is top whatever I've been writing and just keep, make sure that I have enough content for when this actually all starts happening again, you know, that we can raise that bar, as you said, with Vicious. So, you know, it's just, but the other thing, the weirdest thing though, is I was just talking about this, to Joe yesterday about how now subject matter has kind of changed in the same way as if, I don't know if you're doing this, if you're watching like Netflix or something, and you're watching a movie and they're in a crowded space, or they're, you know, at a concert, or they're shaking hands. You're like, oh God, that was so like 3 weeks ago, yeah, you know, like that. This, you know, not with the times anymore. But in that same aspect, with like, as far as with writing lyrics, you know, I don't know. There's like a bunch of different things that I think that I was like really excited about or into, you know, a couple weeks ago. And now I don't know. Lyrics mean something different now. And even songs that we already have, you know, like we were just doing this Twitch performance yesterday, just to raise money for, you know, just for just relief funds for medical people and getting masks, and also trying to raise money for maybe eventually getting a vaccine. It was kind of like this weird telethon.
Is that the thing that Barry Gibb did? Didn't Barry Gibb do that?
I think he was on there too. Yeah. There was like a bunch of people, us and Lindsey Stirling and a band called Shade, and there was a bunch of DJs. It was really cool actually to see everybody come together like that. But anyway, we performed two songs. One of our songs was The Silence off of Vicious, and the other one was Here's to Us. And it's amazing how as I was singing these lyrics, all of a sudden it just means something completely different than what it was a couple weeks ago, you know? And so, I don't know, I'm approaching that with almost this, I don't know, it almost not... excitement, yes, but also I feel like I'm just observing the world in a different way. So so I don't know, like I might actually end up, like even the songs that I thought that were like worthy of the record a couple weeks ago, I might just have to trash those for now and just start again. So yeah, so that's been interesting in my life as well.
I said on the air the other day, I said, I know that in about six to 12 months, somewhere in that range, I'm going to be interviewing a lot of artists who are going to be telling me about their new record or their new song and being like, yeah, I wrote that in day 22 of the quarantine, yes, or it was influenced by not being able to get toilet paper, or, you know, it's going to make for some interesting storylines and songs, I would think, for the next few years to come. It sounds like it's absolutely already doing it for you. You're reconsidering stuff you've written.
Absolutely. It's funny you say about the dates. Like, I've started dating, like, what you went, because I still write with pen and paper and all that, and then I transfer it over. But as I'm, like, doing my chicken scratch stuff, I've started to date it just so that I can, at least me, like, I can look back and be like, oh, yeah, that was during that time. You know? Like, you know, I don't know. It's weird being disconnected from physical aspect of people, but also I feel like everybody is online and everybody's talking to each other. So it's so strange because you don't have that physical, like, hey, I'm hanging out at a party with my friends and drinking some wine. Those subjects aren't really like there right now. You know, it's like you have to just kind of, you're thinking more inward and also more, I guess, mass, you know, population and world. So I think in a lot of ways, whatever these new songs are happening right now, like those are the two kind of categories. It's either extremely personal or absolutely just, you know, one for the world, you know? So it's kind of nuts.
So you guys actually haven't recorded anything yet for the record. You're still in the writing mode. You were supposed to start recording with Nick, who is your producer, and he's a regular listener of this show. He's always texting me with lists and things, which is really very nice. And
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome. So you were supposed to be start recording now, and obviously that's backburnered. So that's maybe given you some more time to reflect on the material you were going to go in with?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're just, it's just demo mode, completely.
Right.
And the good thing about, like I said, like with some of the, just the gear that I've collected over the past couple of years, is that if there is, I'm at least, well, except for drums, but like anything that I record at home via, you know, guitar, piano, vocals, if that is actually the keep or take, we can use that. That actually happened a lot on Vicious while we were making that, because I would be making these demos at home with this gear. Then we would get in the studio, you know, a couple weeks later, like after, you know, whatever, the excitement from the song kind of like died down. And then Nick, being, you know, the guy with the ears, he's like, hey man, like you have these inflections in your demo that like you're just not, it's just not there right now. You're thinking too much. And so like we would either have to kind of backtrack and have me kind of study my demo, or he'd be like, hey, we'll just like put that on there. We'll use your demo vocal. So,
well, didn't you tell me, Lizzie, or maybe it was Nick that told me, because the silence, I mean, the vocal performance on that is just stunning. And I think somebody I heard it from, correct me if I'm wrong, told me that actually was the demo vocal, right?
That absolutely was the demo vocal.
Wow.
It was funny. Well, and it's funny because we talked about that because, you know, I had done a bunch of takes in the studio when we got everything all like, you know, done up and whatever, and got all the guitars sounding pretty. And it's funny because I literally recorded that vocal at like 3 a.m. because that's where apparently I had been sitting there until 3 a.m. And so I put it down and I wasn't thinking about it because I'm thinking, oh, whatever, it's a demo, I'll do it better later. And we just couldn't match whatever that magic was. So again, you know, to me, I feel very lucky that I made that kind of investment a couple of years ago, because now, given this time, I am going to be able to at least get some things accomplished without having to like, you know, write and then redo and then re-record and whatever. So, hopefully that's the case anyway.
Well, right.
It all depends on how much I pay attention.
Right. Well, thanks to technology, for some of us, we're lucky that we can work and it can be a productive time. Like I was telling you just before we started the interview, that I'm lucky that I've had a home studio that I've worked from doing radio predominantly for the last 3 years or so. And it's been great because I'm lucky I can still work and this is what I do and I can still get a check and still deliver what I need to deliver to my, you know, my employer. You as a musician, now with this investment you've made in equipment, you can make this time productive. Okay, you know, you're not on the road, which of course is a big part of the business now, but you're able to actually work on what, you know, fine tuning your songs and now actually recording them in a way that will be useful and maybe cut time down when you do end up getting with Nick.
Oh, absolutely. I think about like years ago, you know, I mean, even before social media, you know, and I'm like, I'm writing in my basement with, you know, a 4-track Tascam recorder, you know, and like all this stuff. And there's like no connection necessarily, you know. I'm so glad that this didn't happen then,
right.
You know, because with that positive spin, we're living in this beautiful age of the internet and social media and entertainment and the things that you can just do from your house now. So, you know, as much as this is, you know, devastating in a lot of ways, you know, we are very lucky, you know, to be living in this time. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens, man.
You know, and the other thing too, in talking to artists, both, you know, on the air and privately, is just checking in with people and bands that I know over the years. The one thing that some of them are telling me, because there is so much, we all know the business is so much about the road and about touring, and that's where the mm-hmm. money's made, and that's where so many people spend their time now. And the thing is that the upside of this, in talking to some people, is that, you know what? Actually, the reason why we have to stay in kind of sucks, but actually, it's actually kind of a cool little decompress that, you know, to kind of like get away from the madness of the road and the travel and the hustle and bustle and actually be able to spend a little bit more time with, you know, families, friends, loved ones, kids, whatever the situation may be. granted, there's people that are probably going crazy dealing with that too. And trust me, I've talked to them privately too, like they're ready to blow their brains out. But the great majority of people are like, yeah, you know what? It's actually good to be home for a little bit. This is actually okay. And I think everybody's looking at it in a different way, depending upon their situation, of course.
Oh, absolutely. And I flip-flop between both of those things because, you know, on one hand, like, this is a beautiful time to, like, kind of reflect on things and yourself. And but at the same time, like, the reason that we tour so much is because we kind of primally need it, or at least I do. So, like, even just, like, so that's why I keep, like, saying yes to all of these, like, kind of live, you know, internet performances, because I'm like, man, I need a gig.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. Like, what, why do I feel like you have these moments like, man, why do I just like feel bummed for no reason at all? Like every, like it's a beautiful day and I just feel, but, oh, I haven't had a show in a while, you know? So I don't know. And usually I would be getting that sick here in Nashville. You know, there's at any given day of the week, all of my friends, you know, gig all the time. And I'll get up and, you know, sing a Judas Priest cover or something and like just get my fix that way. So the fact that that's not happening either, we were actually supposed to be doing that as well. There was a Nashville relief from the tornadoes
right.
gig that we were all supposed to be a part of. And it was like literally the entire rock community was slotted for this huge night at the Cannery. And that's gone away too. So it's like, oh no. So it's like one of those things where it's a little bittersweet. I'm very lucky. Like none of my family members or friends are sick. You know, everyone's like doing their part, you know, so far so good. But yeah, but we're all literally like, we've been group chatting, you know, and it's just, it's hilarious to get on with those guys and everyone's like, are crazy for a gig, so we're all like venting to each other. Fun game though. So one of my my DJ friend, actually you might know him, do you know Johnny Dare?
Sure, of course I do.
At Kansas City.
Yeah so I love Johnny. Yeah,
a couple of months ago he sent me an Alice Cooper head, right? And it's made by the same people that make the guillotine head that Alice tours with, right? So mm-hmm. he sent me one. And so it started probably about a week or so ago when we were just kind of bored and nothing to do. So Joe ended up putting the head on top of a coat rack that's in my bedroom. And it scared the bejesus out of me, right? Because you just like walk in the bedroom and there's like a guy with a head, right? So I in turn hid it in his closet drawer and scared the bejesus out of him, and then it went back and forth for a couple of days, and now the head is hidden and it's kind of like tag you're it, and we're just that's been a, like, and I turned to him the other day, I'm just like, is this what it's come down to? that's how we're passing the time, and you know, we feel a little insane. But I guess it's fitting with the Alice Cooper head.
So. Yeah, well, of course, you know that. You know, as you're saying this, I'm looking at in my home studio. I've got this gargoyle mask that Kirk Hammett gave me, and it's sitting here on a stand, and it can go on someone's head. And now I'm thinking with my two kids, I always like to shake them up a little bit and keep them on their toes. So you're giving me some ideas to maybe plant that somewhere in their rooms.
Some fun quarantine activities, like even if it's like, you know, in an underwear drawer or something, sock drawer. Oh Jesus, you know.
Hey, let me ask you a couple quick things, and I'll let you go. I saw you at NAMM earlier this year when things were normal. Saw you very briefly in the Gibson room, and then and you know, I meant to ask you this. I don't play guitar. It's my one regret that I never took lessons and learned. Maybe one day I will. But I love the instrument, and I love just looking at it, and I love the design of it and all that. And I've always loved the Explorers. I always thought they were one of the coolest looking guitars ever. And you have your own model through Gibson. That is an Explorer, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so that came out a couple of years ago, and it's just the design of it and the look of it. And again, I wish I could tell you, oh my God, it plays amazing, but I don't play, so I wouldn't know, but I'm sure it does. But how is that done for you? I mean, that's got to be such a cool thing. And I've gotten to know the folks running Gibson now, and they seem like really good people. And it's really good to see that company kind of come back from almost being dead at one point. But how's that guitar done for you? Has it sold well? Is it, you know, you got to be really proud of having something like that, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so humbled, you know, to be able to be a part of that team. And you're absolutely correct. The company has completely transformed into this very, like, it just feels like family. You know, we all actually, like, we hang out and go out to dinner all the time with a bunch of the peeps they really care, which is amazing. Yeah. It's been actually like incredible. They have to keep sending me, the COAs, the certificate of authenticity to sign, cause they keep selling out of it, which is awesome. But the most beautiful thing that has happened with all of this and with the signature guitar has been, when I get, letters from these little girls. And they're, it's like, you know, from like 8 to 9 year olds, right? And they're drawing me or their parents give me the letters from their kids and they're drawing me and they draw me with the Explorer. Now, like the angles are a little wonky because it's, you know, it's a tough guitar to draw, I'm sure, even if you're an adult. But it's been amazing to see that become kind of an extension of my, not only my image and personality, but also, just to be in, inspiring some young girls to pick up a guitar, yeah. to even if it's just, hey, I just want to like feel cool wearing it. And like just beautiful letters from parents, you know, getting it for their kids for Christmas and all of these things. And so just to have that kind of reach and be, you know, hopefully for some of these kids, be that person that, you know, that I kind of had to dig into my parents, you know, generation of music to have when I was a kid, you know, so there weren't a whole lot of, you know, electric guitar playing girls, you know, when I was coming up in the scene and when I was starting to get interested in guitar. So I had to go back to, you know, Joan Jett and Nancy Wilson and Lita Ford and all of these people that I was like, okay, cool. It is possible. So just to be that person that at least, you know, a little girl can look up and be like, oh, okay, she's doing it, so therefore it's possible and I can too. Is just, and that's been the most wonderful thing to happen with this signature guitar.
Yeah, get kids off of their computers and video games and what have you, and, you know, their phones, and maybe get a guitar in their hands and get the next generation going some. That's awesome. I'll tell you, I saw the guitar 2 years ago at NAMM when I was in that Gibson room hanging up. It was hanging up on the wall, and I didn't know it was your guitar. And I was Cesar from Gibson. I was talking to him, and I said, "Wow, that is a badass looking guitar." I'm like, "If I played guitar, I'd want one of those things because that is so cool looking." And he goes, "That's the Lizzie Hale model." I go, "Oh, I knew it. Of course it is. It was just so cool." So I'm glad it's doing well for you. That's really good to hear.
Well, dude, I mean, we're all quarantined. There's never a better time for you to sit down and learn some chords.
You know, I was thinking I was thinking about that because I got sent something from, I don't know, one of the guitar companies, just a link, and it was just like online lessons or some program to learn. And I do have a bunch of guitars that musicians have given me over the years just hanging on my wall, but I couldn't play a note of them. But I was thinking about that. But I got to tell you, I actually... where a lot of my friends are just telling me how bored they are sitting around, and I get it. I'm actually not. I'm actually like, because I'm still doing all my normal work. Yeah. My schedule, beyond being on the road, like in the last 3-4 years, I've traveled more than I ever have in my life. Nothing like a touring musician would be, but a lot for me. So actually, I'm enjoying the time, and I'm getting caught up on so many things I need to do, and I'm still doing, you know, a couple radio shows a day, really. So, yeah, things are a little more chill, but I don't know if I have the time or discipline to really, and the patience to really sit down and want to learn. But even if I could just knock out a few chords, I'd be happy. I'm not looking to be Yngwie Malmsteen. I'm just looking to be able to, you know, chunk out a couple riffs. But one of these days, I'm going to pick one of these up and try. I really am.
One of the most satisfying things, and this is the only thing you got to do, right? Just learn an A minor and make sure you crank it up and just like da da, and it just feels great.
All right.
Well, if you're ever bummed for any reason, just like literally that's the rock stance, you know, Angus Young, you know, with horns up in the air chord. So I encourage just one. You don't even have to learn three. Three is better because then you can actually like do more with it. But even if it's just one.
All right. Well, I actually have a tiny little lamp and I actually have a few guitars hanging on the wall. So maybe hopefully this quarantine thing doesn't last much longer, but maybe I'll pull one of them off the wall and try to master that at some point. Although I don't think the world needs me playing guitar. That's for sure, Lizzie. I think there's plenty of great players like yourselves that have got that covered. Here's the real question talking about guitars, and I'll leave you on this one. So the real question is, in the quarantine and with this deal with Gibson, will you be bringing back the keytar?
Ah, you know, it's funny you say that, because the guys at Sweetwater actually sent me one of their new keytars a couple months ago, that just like the Roland AX, whatever. And it is so, it is so like futuristic looking. It is white and gold. So it kind of like looks like my guitar anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, you know, I wouldn't even have to play it. If I just strap it on and walk out on a stage, it's an automatic woo. It's an automatic woo. Yeah. It's like, what a weird secret weapon. But I've been playing on it and it makes me feel like I'm like 13 again, because that was the keytar was my gateway drug to guitar.
Yeah, we should give people the backstory for people, because we've talked about this before on the show and it's just funny. Is you brought it up. I think you were on my show with Joe one time a few years ago, and they're like, yeah, there's, you know, well, Lizzie first started rocking the keytar, and I'm like, the keytar? And for people listening that don't know, it's the keyboard you wear around your neck that kind of acts like a guitar. Yeah. And then you or Joe were like, yeah, just go on YouTube, there's videos of little Lizzie playing the keytar. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, you like started mastering the keytar. That's unbelievable.
So it's funny because I've been playing on it and I literally, it's weird. I had to like go back in time and I'm like, maybe I should like relearn that song I was playing when I was 15. I don't know. But don't tempt me, because
you could bring it back. You could bring the keytar back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? Maybe that needs to be a small goal for some of these new songs for the next record, because then I'll have a reason. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If you you remember this conversation when you see me, but don't, you know, I'm not kidding. I don't threaten me with a good time.
You should bring it out for like half of a song or something, just to see how much of the audience makes that connection. It's just like, oh my God, this is great. You know, it's always so much fun when you see artists go back to their roots. Just don't know if you want to go back that far, but it would be pretty cool. A little homage to your dad, you know?
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Dad would be proud.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. Stay sane, stay safe, stay healthy. Say hello to the guys in the band. And if you need anything, hit me up and, you know, say hello to all my friends there in Nashville. I'm sure everybody's dealing with it the best they can. And hopefully we'll be on the other side of it sooner than later.
Oh, absolutely, man. And thanks for reaching out and for, you know, giving me a little social. It's just it's lovely to talk to you and hear your voice, and I'm glad you're doing well. And I can't wait to party with you on the other side, man.
Yeah,
it's gonna
I know.
One hell of a one.
I know. Then for sure. We'll definitely knock a few back next time. It'll be long overdue. So, all right, Lizzie, thank you so much. Thanks for the time and good luck with the record. I can't wait to hear the next record. I really can't. And obviously, you know, maybe some songs about quarantine coming, it sounds like, too.
Absolutely. You're the best, Eddie. Thank you.
Take care, Lizzie. Bye-bye.
My thanks to Lizzie Hale. Always great to visit with her. Look forward to seeing what Hailstorm has in store for their next record. Hopefully they'll get around to being able to get into a studio to record it when all of the virus mania clears. Coming up next, David Ellefson of Megadeth.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Back with interview number two of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, and I've got David Ellefson of Megadeth. Now, again, the interview you're about to hear, in it, David talks about a upcoming sort of online telethon that he was doing for a charitable cause. That has happened. It happened last weekend, so disregard that in terms of it coming up when we talk about it, just so it's in context. Again, all the interviews you hear on the podcast originate from my SiriusXM radio show, Trunk Nation, which is daily 2 to 4, 10 to midnight Eastern. Has to be a week or two before I use them here on the podcast, so that is the reason for the timeline being a little bit off. But a lot of other great content in this interview with David, including him talking about Megadeth's tour opening for Five Finger Death Punch and what it was like to be back on stage again with David Ellefson, Dave Mustaine, I should say, in his first shows after recovering from cancer. So we cover a lot, and here is David Ellefson of Megadeth. Enjoy.
How are you, sir?
Good, Eddie. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. You are in Arizona, correct?
I am in Arizona. Yeah, I've been here since we got home off the Five Finger Death Punch Megadeth Bad Wolf tour that we did across Europe in January and February. Our last show was on the 23rd of February in Bulgaria, and then went up to London for a couple of days and came home after that. And it was interesting because we were literally ahead of this coronavirus thing by a couple weeks. It didn't hear anything about it really in Europe the first, really pretty much through January, but by kind of early to mid-February, we started hearing about it, you know, and we'd actually done a show in Italy, in Milan, and there was no concern at all about it then. And it's interesting how we stayed a couple of weeks ahead of it and got home safely. And, you know, we just got home and hunkered down. We did have a show. We were going to headline the Hell in Heaven Festival in Mexico, middle of March. And we did end up canceling that. Dirk and I were supposed to head to Nashville right after that to go start recording drums and bass on the new Megadeth album. But, you know, that was right as everything was locking down. And, you know, it's been pretty chill here in Arizona. Our governor finally locked everything down 2 nights ago, and that was really at the insistence, I think, of the healthcare community to just, you know, insist, like, look, everybody stay home and we can get ahead of this. And the, you know, the amount of cases of COVID-19 that have been reported here is extremely low, and I think, you know, obviously if we can keep it that way, you know, all the better.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we were just talking off the air here for a second before we started, and you have roots here in New Jersey where I am, and I know you live in Arizona, but in New Jersey and New York area, it's a real different story. In LA, it's a bit of a different story, and then other parts of the country, not so much. But I think the idea is to manage it now. If everybody gets on board with managing it, maybe we get back to normalcy sooner than later. I guess that's where it's going. But the crazy thing about this that I get, David, is it just seems like nobody truly really knows. You know, it's like there's a lot of people, and I watch the news and people trying to politicize this and what have you, and they jump on people for changing their tune. Well, you know what? Everybody's changing their tune because every day there's different news coming out about this one way or the other. Like, we were told not to wear, if you're healthy and you go out, don't wear masks. It's pointless. Today, they came out and said, you know what, you should wear a mask even if you're healthy. So it keeps evolving and changing, and everybody's just trying to adapt and figure out what works best for them and hopefully, you know, put it all behind us soon. It really is uncharted waters. It's crazy.
Yep, I agree. You know, I'm married to a Jersey girl, as you know. And she, yeah. You know, we bought a place, you know, down in Barnegat, just off LBI, you know, where she grew up. And it's just kind of our summer getaway to get out of the heat. Of course, I'm usually on tour during the summer, but You know, when we moved here, to Scottsdale from Los Angeles back in 93, you know, she grew up a beach girl, and she said, "Oh my God, please don't let me die in the desert." So we, you know, we picked up a place down, you know, kind of down the road from you there in Jersey. And, you know, in fact, my in-laws, her mom and dad, you know, they've been snowbirding out here, and they have a condo out here in Scottsdale, really since my kids were born. You know, many years back, 20 some years ago. So, you know, they're here and they were kind of panicking. Should we go home? Or like, no, stay here like that. You know, I think going home to New Jersey would be the worst thing you can do. And, you know, and then you look at it you know, Frank Bello and I were just doing a podcast the other day, and Frank was surprisingly chill. He looked really good and he was very relaxed. He, of course, was in his basement of his house, but you know, he was, you know, talking about how he would go out and get groceries with the full mask and gloves and the whole thing. And, you know, we see a little bit of that here in Arizona, certainly like at the grocery stores, you know, the cashiers who are kind of on the front lines. You know, my daughter is an ASU nursing student right now, and she's, you know, all classes are online at home now. So she does get some information that comes in. You know, that it's interesting. I'll ask her, say, what did you hear today? And she'll tell us what she got from her sources, which, you know, usually are not economically or politically slanted. They're just more straight, you know, kind of medical factual stuff. So it's really, you know, and of course we're talking to our friends back in Barnegat and Manahawkin area back in New Jersey, and they're, you know, filling us in on stuff that's happening back there. But, feel very blessed, quite honestly, Eddie, to be here in Arizona. It's a perfect, pretty blue, clear sky today. And we live in not a very heavily populated suburban area. And you know, very, very thankful, you know, that we're able, everyone in Megadeth is healthy and we're all home. And Kiko's in Finland. You know, he's over there. He married a Finnish girl and years back. And so he and his wife and kids, they're holed up in Helsinki. So, he and I were just actually, we were talking on WhatsApp last night and he's saying, what do you think, you know, long-term? And I said, well, look, the concert business is in a weird state. I mean, right now the Megadeth Lamb of God tour scheduled to start in June, July, and then a second leg of October, November. I mean, currently it's in motion as planned. But, you know, I think, like you say, every day it's something different. And I think kind of weekly you have to be prepared to change your strategy and make some contingencies. Cause it's, I mean, especially for the concert business. I mean, my God, as if the record business didn't take a big enough hit over the recent years, you know, now the one source of bread and butter for not just artists, but crew and staff and right. venues and promoters. I mean, everybody, it's like now that, I mean, that's, you know, who knows? I mean, that could be 6 months, 12 months. Who knows what the state of this is? So we just take it a day at a time.
It really is crazy. And I feel for those folks and, you know, the bigger acts, they're going to be able to weather this. But the smaller bands, the club level bands, the crews, the people behind the scenes, they're all taking a hit. I mean, it's just crazy. We're going to talk about some stuff that you have going on for a really great cause in a second, but you just mentioned the tour that you did do, and you said you went through Italy, which was, you know, I'm good friends with Mike Piazza, the baseball player. Mike lives in Italy, and he got out just in time. I mean, that area got hit so hard. You guys went through there. How did that tour go with Five Finger? Because it was beyond the stuff going on with the virus starting to build. It was also, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, that was Dave's first run back since the cancer, right?
Right, right. No, it was. It was, yeah, fortunately we were safe from everything. I tell you, the first thing we noticed when we flew into Helsinki, Finland to start the tour, and it's the second week of January, there was no snow. And, you know, it's a very, you know, I know here the whole global warming is a very polarizing political thing. Over there, it is very much a reality to them. Like, I asked my cab driver, I said, like, what is the deal? He goes, oh, it's global warming. I mean, just not, like, to have Europe with no snow in January.
Wow.
You know, I mean, so that was kind of the first thing. You're like, wow, like, this is kind of like, we bicker over this in the United States, and now this is like a real thing.
Right.
So, you know, you see things, of course, as you travel the world, you know, through some different eyes. But, you know, that first show we did in, you know, we rehearsed in Nashville, and Dave just took it very easy. We've been talking for a couple weeks about the set list and what kind of songs to play. And quite honestly, you know, we have, you know, Megadeth is one of these very rare bands where we can, you know, ramp it up with Lamb of God and play a very thrash set. with a more of a radio rock band like Five Finger Death Punch, we can play some kind of more mid-tempo, you know, mainstream songs that are kind of more radio material.
Right, sure, yeah.
You know, we're a band that can really, you know, we're not a one-trick pony. We can kind of tailor our set list a bit to the audience. And quite honestly, that Five Finger Tour was a real blessing for us, because there's no way we would have been able to do hour and a half headlining shows, get with Dave just kind of easing back into it again. So for us to go out and do a 60-minute direct support set was perfect. Every night, I mean, was packed, sold out. I mean, it was a huge tour of the biggest sports arenas across Europe. It was just phenomenal for everybody. I mean, we were all high-fiving every day just going, man, the frickin' place is back tonight, you know?
Well, you know, let me jump in on that real quick, because when that tour was announced, it was kind of surprising to a lot of people that Megadeth was supporting Five Finger. Now, I know Five Finger does really well, but we were all sort of wondering, is that a byproduct of the fact, or was that a byproduct of the fact that is Five Finger a bigger band right now in Europe, or was it also a bit of a thing where, after I thought about it a little bit, you know, I said, well, maybe this is actually the best thing for Dave, because coming back off of cancer, doing a little less set time, not having that pressure of an hour and a half, an hour and 45 headline, maybe this is a good way for him to get his foot back in the water. Was that mentality there, or was it, or does Five Finger really do that well in Europe? Because I just don't know.
Well, here's a couple of things. From the Megadeth strategy, you know, for a few years now, you know, we've been going over and doing mostly the big summer festival run. And there's kind of two seasons of it. There's sort of the late May through June into early July. It's kind of a 7-week run of those festivals. And then there's a second wave, which is kind of mid-July through about mid-August. So there's kind of two legs of the European festival tour circuit. So we've been doing that pretty much in the last, the 10 years since I've been back in the band, the last decade. That's pretty much what our summers in Europe have looked like. And we've been looking at ways to try to get Megadeth back over there to do a proper real headlining tour. And the numbers were always they just didn't line up, budgets. And, you know, because again, we want to put on a big arena level show. Some markets we could do that business, other markets, you know, can change and be kind of fickle over there. So when this Five Finger opportunity came up, you know, and Five Finger, look, they're firing on all cylinders right now. I mean, they're really hitting their stride. It's and good for them. You know, it's great for them. But, you know, they needed a good, strong package. And this was it. You know, I mean, Bad Wolves, of course, being a great opener. Megadeth, we pack a big punch and we bring our cachet to the thing. And of course, you know, Five Finger, you know, is writing on now a brand new album. And at that point in January, February, the anticipation of a new album. And a couple things I learned from Zoltan, you know, who, you know, really runs and directs the band from sort of a business strategy perspective, you know, a lot like Lars from Metallica. You know, Lars understood how to build Metallica because he came from Europe over to America, and basically, you know, he had the vision of how to build a band from America to become an international level band at the level of what Metallica is. Well, Zoltan is basically in my view, a similar component inside of Five Finger. You know, he's from Hungary. He moved over here to America many years ago, and you know, has gotten to have a different view of America and Europe. And so he, you know, he told me how they strategically built that band across Europe, across Germany, France, the UK, Scandinavia. And I tell you what, Eddie, I mean, we were playing these huge arenas in Germany, and they were freaking packed. I mean, sold out every night. And it was nice. It was weird because, you know, some nights we'd walk off stage and go, yeah, that wasn't exactly an entire Megadeth audience out there. And, you know, I kept telling Zolt, I was like, dude, I got to hand it to you, man. You really read that one properly. You know, like, you guys have really done your work and earned a great audience here. And, you know, years back in the early 90s, Countdown to Extinction, for instance, we'd go over and play those big halls. You know, Megadeth Slayer, we'd go over and do it on Clash of the Titans in 1990 and stuff. But, you know, a lot of those countries can be very fickle, and Germany in particular, as much as it's known for its metal fervor, they also went through a very big transition into electronic music and stuff through the late 90s into the 2000s. So, I mean, it really, dude, the stars lined up on this one, man. It was a really successful win for all three of the bands on that tour.
And how did Dave do himself? Like, How did he? I haven't spoken to him in a little bit. How did he do with the shows? I mean, how was his stamina? Did he feel good? Did he have any issues?
You know, he did fantastic. You know, he, again, we strategically put a set list together that would really help him not push. And sometimes it was some of the lower range songs. Sometimes it was songs like Wake Up Dead that don't have, you know, pretty thrashing tune, but doesn't have a lot of a lot of words in it. You know, bringing in some things like Dawn Patrol, which gives him a bit of a vocal break. Conquer or Die, of course, off Dystopia album is an instrumental. So that gives a nice vocal break. So, you know, we're kind of strategically thinking about that. And so every night we could kind of toy with the set list, gave us an opportunity to change the set list a lot. And I think, you know, Dave, I think for all of us, we were all very, very grateful, Eddie, to be back on stage being Megadeth again. Yeah. The very first night in Helsinki, you know, we changed our VIP meet and greets where we started with like a 30-minute Q&A between the VIP members and the band, and we'd sit there at a table, it's almost like a press conference, and we'd get to hear from the fans and they'd ask questions. And I'd say that first night when Dave told about what he really went through in the process, and I was sitting next to him and he was really protecting his voice as he was talking. And to just really hear from him what he really went through was, I got to tell you, man, it was a very emotional moment. And he took that same conversation on stage and he had a moment and he just told the story of when he was diagnosed and what he went through and the treatments and then being deemed cancer free and, you know, how he's, you know, he's thankful but cautious, you know, and he's really just taking it very easy, you know, going through that process. So it was a big win on so many levels. I think internally for Megadeth, just to be thankful that he's okay, he's healthy, and we get another shot at it.
Yeah, well, sure. And it's been a tough run for Dave here because obviously his sister just passed. I texted him my condolences the other day, and I just, you know, between the cancer and that, and now a guy like that who's recovering from cancer, I mean, with what we're going through in the world with this virus, you've got to be real careful. People have any sort of compromised immune systems and stuff, they're real in a real danger zone right now, needing to really be hunkered down and away from everybody. So rough start, you know, rough year or so for Dave, but hopefully better things ahead. And it sounds like there are. I mean, where things stand now, because I'm seeing, you know, it's crazy. I don't know what's going on. Just like we said, nobody really knows, but starting to see some tours and shows being blown out in July it's mm-hmm. real concerning, because then you're like, well, if that's the case, we could lose the whole summer touring season. I mean, that's a real, real risk right now. You guys are scheduled to start around mid-June with Lamb. There's a bunch of big tours mid-June. Of course, we had a ton of big festivals blown out in May. But as it stands now, the plan is for you guys to still do that tour.
That is the plan right now. Yes. And I think behind the scenes, and again, it's not entirely our decision. I mean, again,
right.
It's
you promoters.
Know, Live Nation is, yeah, the promoter, the venues, the buildings. I mean, again, we're at the beck and call of that. I mean, I have a solo tour, that I was going to do with Chris Poland in Australia and Japan, in May. And, we got word from the promoter, last week that Australia is not issuing any visa, any work visas until at least June 14th. So that immediately means a reschedule of that. So we're pushing that back probably into 2021. Same, of course, with Japan. So I watched my whole May just go away, you know, something that I was just going to do personally. And again, even to get to Nashville right now to record, I mean, we had a nice little kind of 10-day window for me and Dirk and Dave to be there and to be working, tracking. And the other thing was, again, Kiko being up in Finland with his family. I mean, Finnair has shut down all flights.
Right.
Kiko really sees it from a very different perspective. I mean, you know, the European, unlike here, okay, the United States, there's 50, well, it's lower 48, if you will. You know, we're all kind of in it together. Well, Europe's all in it together, but every country, of course, operates kind of like we states possibly could, where they can shut down borders. You know, the Czech Republic can shut their borders, whereas Germany may not. Flights are, I think all the flights have just stopped. I mean, flights are not going anywhere right now across Europe. So, I mean, Kiko couldn't get to Nashville to record a Megadeth album if we wanted him to. I mean, he is literally landlocked over there. And so, you know, these are some real realities of even just getting together to make a record right now.
Last thing on Megadeth, and I want to change gears and talk about something really cool you're doing, charitable, and some of your own things that you have going on. But I'm wondering about this. So I was talking to Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm on my show the other day, and they're kind of like in the same mode as where Megadeth is, in the sense that they were about to start recording, and they had the bulk of the record's pretty much written, and they were ready to go. And then one of the things she was telling me is, now that everything is kind of on hold in terms of people working, it's given her more time to toil with the songs and sort of say like, well, maybe I'm going to rewrite this, or I'm going to rewrite this, or I'm going to work on this. So that is, and that could be, as you know, as a musician doing this for decades, that can be a two-edged sword, because you open up a whole can of worms. Like, well, I can redo that. So material-wise for Megadeth, is everything done and locked? Or do you think with this, because also you and I both know that this is having an effect on people in a lot of ways. I think it's going to inspire, if maybe that's the wrong word. Well, yeah, inspire. It's going to influence music. I think that I'm going to be hearing from a lot of artists and talking to them saying, down, you know, 6 months, a year from now, saying, yeah, that song was written during the quarantine. That song was written about the virus. That song was written about what was going on in the world at that time. So I think we're going to see a lot of that when things ramp up, seep into new music. So I guess the question is, like, was the Megadeth material locked, or do you think that it, with this break and hold on recording, that maybe some stuff's going to be revisited?
Yeah, I think some things are going to be revisited. I mean, Dave and I always had a thing, and this was back in the 80s, nothing's final until it's vinyl. Meaning until it was pressed into vinyl. I mean, you know, a vinyl or a cassette, I guess, or 8-track back in the day. You know, it's not final until it comes out. So everything's subject to change. Even through the recording process, things change. And of course, with digital editing, we can, you know, have even more luxury of that. But, you know, I think the reason we booked late March as our start date is we work best when we've got deadlines and we've got our back against the wall. We just do. I remember when we were making the Euthanasia record, and Max Norman, we're out here in Phoenix, the whole band had relocated out here to make the record. Max had built a studio, and he, one day he told me, he goes, Matt, in his British accent, you know, Max, he goes, man, we gotta get this record started, man. We're running out of money and we're running out of time. And I said, well, what is the budget? What is the schedule? And he goes, the budget is whatever, as much money as you have, it gets spent. And as much time as you have, you use it. And I was like, fair enough. and I took that as a real lesson from Max. It's kind of like, you know, it just kind of, you keep kicking it down the road until there's a deadline. And that was one of the reasons we wanted a deadline, is to just, okay, now it's time to get going. And of course, look, we had some plans and strategies about dropping singles around the tour coming up this year. And of course, all of that changes. I mean, you know, you figure everybody at Universal Music, our record company, they're all probably working from home. Even the studios in Nashville, you know, to what degree they're mandating employees to work from home and not even be in the studio. Cartage, you know, Cartage, the people to move our drums and amplifiers from warehouses into studios. I mean, and again, the whole industry, you know, everything just locked down, you know, so even if we wanted to go record some music, it just may not be available to us.
Yeah. I think you're seeing a lot of releases pushed back, things that are even done that were supposed to come out. Nobody's going to put that out against everything going on right now. You can't do radio tours. You can't play live. You can't do publicity, really, nothing in person, you know. So it's really an unprecedented time, and it's having an impact across the board. Now, you also have some great stuff going on as far as a new single that you've done for charity. Talk a little bit about that, if you will.
Yeah, as much as we just talked about kind of our traditional modes and methods of living life and touring and all that we do as bands, you know, this season right now of crisis has also opened up some opportunities to think different and get out of the box. And of course, one of them, look, we've got this technology. I mean, you and I are chatting from two different states, and our phones, we've got Cisco WebEx, we've got Zoom, we've got Skype, we've got so many different things that are right at our disposal anyway. And I think right now is a time when we're forced to dip in and use those things. And about a year and a half ago, I started the David Ellefson Youth Music Foundation, and it was designed specifically to help support music programs in particular rural areas, public schools, private education, et cetera. Because I grew up on a farm in Minnesota, so that area was, you know, that's a kind of a near to me. I got my start as a musician in the public school system, playing an orchestra band and jazz band and stuff. So for me, I see the real significance of it. Well, with the COVID-19 matter on us right now, schools around the country, around the world are just closed. They're shut down and kids are forced to be at home. So what my partner Tom Hazard and I came up with an idea to be able to teach free lessons to the students who are out of school right now. And I can't possibly do all of them, so I started tapping some of my buddies, other, you know, well-known musicians like Bumblefoot, Chris Poland, Clint Lowry from Seven Dust, Nita Strauss from Alice Cooper's band, and a whole bunch of others, Jimmy DeGrasso, to help out and do it. And I tell you, you know, we put up, we called the initiative Schools Out, and we're part of the Grammy Music Education Coalition, so they've been a huge supporter for us with this. We've got a nice technology grant from Cisco, also from Dolby. And that has really just been terrific. And along with that, my solo band that I work with internationally is based entirely out of Italy. And while they are all safe, they're all working from home studios. We've been continuing to write some new music, which will eventually become on my next Ellefson solo CD. And we have a track called Simple Truth that we have done. It's mixed. It's ready to go. And as Tom and I were talking about pushing out this initiative, and I said, you know what, why don't we just take that song and let's push it out. We'll put it out to radio. We'll put it up on all the platforms. And we're going to just donate all the income and all the proceeds from that to Italy, to the Italian Red Cross, the COVID-19 relief fund that they have over there. So it feels great. So I've got kind of two initiatives. One, Schools Out, which we give the free lessons from my rock star musician buddies. And then the other one is pushing out a song and just giving all the proceeds over to Italy.
Now, if people want to buy or download or however they help raise funds with through Getting Simple Truth for the Italian Red Cross, how do they do it? Do they go to your site? What's the best way to do it so that the funds get to where they need to get to?
Yep, we're doing a Bandcamp on Bandcamp's sites on April 10th. It'll be coming out there, plus on all digital outlets via Combat Records, which is my record label. It'll be coming out on all the digital outlets on April 17th. So, and that's everywhere, all the Spotify, iTunes, everything. So, when you purchase that, all of the income, all of the royalty income from that will go over there. As far as the Schools Out thing goes, our website, ellefsonyouthmusicfoundation.org, has a nice landing page. There's a donate button up there that if anybody is feeling charitable and would like to donate to that, any of the income from that goes to just help pay for the infrastructure of keeping the foundation open. And I'm not going to lie, Eddie, there's a lot of our friends who are out of work right now. And so we're going to use some of the proceeds of that to pay some of our celebrity instructors to help pay them in this downtime. And the lessons to the kids are free. 18 and under, the kids that have signed up, we're cutting up on almost 1,000 entries of people that have hit us up for free lessons. And Bumblefoot, or, you know, your neighbor up there in New Jersey, he's been so generous with stuff, as Nita Strauss and Jimmy DeGrasso, Dirk Verbeeren, Kiko's going to help out. But our goal is with some of the money that we raise for the foundation is to be able to kick some of that money over to these guys so that they can have a little bit of income in this downtime right now.
Well, that's great stuff. And then the third component of all this that I know you're doing is on April 11th, there's sort of a telethon going on. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, telethon. Yeah, I mean, you know, for you and me, we think Jerry Lewis, right?
Of course, yeah, of course.
24, 48 hours. So who knows, maybe it'll end up to be that. But yeah, we're doing our first ever web-based telethon And it is part of the David Ellison Youth Music Foundation. And that is also a fundraiser. That's going to be at least an 8, maybe a 12-hour telethon that we're going to do. And we're going to be streaming live on the Grammy Music Education Coalition Facebook and through their Twitch account, and also through my own David Ellison Facebook and YouTube accounts, also the Ellison Youth Foundation Facebook and YouTube accounts. And we've got some great people coming in, Bumblefoot, Clint Lowry, Nita Strauss. They're going to actually do some performances. The Loyal Order is another group that's on our label. And your buddies, Don Jamis and Jim Florentine, are coming. So you're more than welcome to join. Maybe we can do a That Metal Show reunion on the telethon. You're
all
more
right.
welcome to join us.
I'll check
We'd love in. To have you.
I'll follow up with you on that for sure. And you got Craig Gass there, too, I see, on your rundown.
Craig Gass is coming. I just talked to Ricky Rackman about an hour ago. He's going to come. He's even offered to host. I told him, look, if we get, like, so shot, he goes, man, I'm happy to help in any way. So it's a come one, come all. It's a fundraiser for the Ellison Youth Music Foundation. And, again, the proceeds are going to really just, it's a charity to just kind of help our own community out, you know, and keep music alive so we can continue to take the music out to the, especially in this case, to the students and the kids who are stuck at home. Keep the creativity going. So,
oh,
yeah,
that's
I'd love
great.
To have you.
Yeah, you'll have some laughs there. You got Don, Jim, and Craig, and then you've got all those great artists in there too. And yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I was telling you off the air that, you know, and this is on Saturday, so I should hopefully have some time to be able to at least jump in for a little bit. But I was telling you off the air, and there's so many people that are struggling for work right now and don't have work right now, or have lost their jobs, or have their jobs and are getting paid but just sitting home bored. I've been lucky in that, thank goodness, I've actually been as busy as I've ever been, because I'm still doing all the things I normally do, and actually even busier because I have to do them all myself. My producers and stuff, they, you know, they can't get to the buildings, they're not working. So, you know, everybody's got different things going on, even though we're all sort of in our respective zones. And you were saying this before we went on the air too, that even for you, you've been really busy and that you've been spending more time practicing, which kind of surprised me when you'd said that, because you think of a guy like you, such an accomplished bass player, doing it for decades, to actually sit down and still practice wouldn't be something that you would really be doing. But you still do actively practice and are doing so more than ever, huh?
I do. And you know what happens is, you know, we get out on tour, for instance, and we get into, you know, we get into our routines. When we show up at the venue, there's meet and greets, try to eat dinner, grab a little bite, then you go into, you know, your wardrobe, change clothes, get ready for the show, vocal warm-ups, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, look, there's time that we, you know, get our guitars and sit down in our jam room and run through a few tunes to get the kind of the band warmed up before we take the stage. But, you know, there's a lot of distractions in the day, and sometimes you're tired or you're feeling a little under the weather. There's a lot of things that happen. So that special time where you can just be alone by yourself to really put the time in on your instrument, Those moments start to go away. And I noticed that when I first moved to LA in 83 and met Dave and we were starting Megadeth, you know, you're trying to make a buck so you can eat doing something. You're trying to write songs. You're trying to put a band together. And the business of being in a band can really take away that time and, you know, to just practice. And eventually Stu Hamm was just a dear friend of mine, and his clinics are amazing. He and I have done some clinic stuff together, and, you know, he's got a quote that I think just says it all. He says, practicing shows up in your playing immediately. When you've been practicing, you can tell. When you haven't, you can tell. And it's an interesting time. I'm certainly working on Megadeth songs, really detailing into that stuff right now. So when the day comes when we can record, I'll be ready to go. But and also, again, I'm always writing. Some days I pick up the bass and the little riff falls out, or I'll pick up a guitar and a little riff falls out, or I'll write a lyric idea. But to sit down, you know, with some, I've got even some music books over here, some slap bass books. And you know, I don't do much slap bass, certainly in rock and roll and metal stuff that I play. But, you know, to just get out of my comfort zone and be academic about it and to take the time, you know, this quiet lockdown time has actually been really, really good for my bass playing, and to really just fall back in love with being a student of the bass again.
Two quick things. You still doing the coffee?
I am. Yes. Coffee is going well. In fact, thank God for our mail order business, you know. In fact, we're probably going to be doing another little push on it because, you know, not that we want everybody sitting around drinking coffee getting nervous at home, but why not?
They're going to drink coffee whether they're getting nervous or not. I mean, that's like the biggest trick. Everybody wants that security of a good cup of coffee. I'll tell you, Starbucks around here in New Jersey, they all had to close unless they had a drive-through. So the only way you could get a Starbucks is if you go through a drive-through. And there's three Starbucks close to my house, but only one of them has a drive-through. So the other two are completely closed. The one with the drive-through, I got to tell you, the line goes through the parking lot because everybody's got to get their caffeine fix.
It's the same way here. You know, we have one here in Scottsdale, and I'm told it was one of the very first drive-thrus in America that they tried. It was a sort of a test market. It's in a big Anchor, but there's a big Sprouts, you know, market. There's a McDonald's and a Chipotle and everything. And it's a great little thing. And it's the same thing. I mean, all the Starbucks here are closed. Initially it started, you could go in, get your coffee, but then you had to leave
right,
and get out
right,
and
right.
hang out. And then I went to a Starbucks. I'm like, what the heck? It's closed. And that drive-thru is the only thing that's open around here. So you're right. It's like, man, the business they must be doing is just off the, you know, through the roof right now at the drive-thrus.
Yeah. And you mentioned Bello a second ago, our good friend Frank Bello. I was excited to see that you guys are going to be on. I know it's a bit down the line, and by the time we get to early next year, hopefully all this virus madness will be long behind us, but I was excited to see you guys, meaning you and Frank with A&A, were added to the Monsters of Rock crew. So there are plans to do more stuff with that band, it sounds like.
Absolutely. I was so happy. You know, Larry Moran, who's the promoter of that, of course, he also did the Mega Cruise.
Sure. Good friend. Yeah.
So he's our buddy, you know. So it's just great to be in his fold, in his world. And yeah, I was very excited when we got the offer to go do it, and I'm sure you'll be there. And
oh yeah,
great lineup of bands, Alice Cooper, and just a whole list of great artists. So yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to that. Me and Frank are excited. You know, it's always nice as an artist to have something to look forward to, because, you know, like I said to Frank, I said, look, we should get together. Why not write some more songs? We actually have a few that we already have written, and we just need to get in probably with Jay Rustin, our producer out in LA, and start recording. So in and around Frank's work with Anthrax this year, writing a new Anthrax record. Hopefully we'll have a couple moments to get in and maybe track a new song or two for Altitudes and Attitude.
Yeah. And I've hosted every Monsters of Rock cruise. And I'll tell you, that's one of the really cool things about that cruise, among many. But one of them is the fact that you will get bands on that cruise that maybe it's the only time because of scheduling or whatever the case may be that they can play all year. So it's a unique opportunity to see some bands that don't tour all that much or can't be all that active, because obviously you have Megadeth, Frank has Anthrax. So there's a lot of those bands that end up being on that ship. And of course, next year is really cool because your Arizona brethren there is the headliner, Alice Cooper. It's going to be amazing.
I know. What a great look that is. And I mean, there is no harder working man in showbiz than Alice. I mean, I think between Alice and Kiss, they've got it nailed down, you know. Look, they learned, right? I mean, look, we grew up on their music, and, you know, they still have an old school work ethic. And in fact, I watched a great Instagram that Paul Stanley did from his house, and he had,
so
he had a great
also,
quote.
Yeah.
Right, but he said, oh, I wrote this thing, he was talking about writing Love Gun, and he talked about, you know, I'd be between a tour. And he said, he goes, a fan asked which tour, and he said, there's only been one Kiss tour,
right,
with little breaks in between. Right. And you know, it really is that. It just kind of goes on and on and on, and, you know, we're blessed. We are of the fortunate ones that we can do that. And Alice Cooper is certainly, my gosh, that guy works. He's never stops, just keeps going. God bless him.
Yeah, he's truly one of a kind. Never stops, still great at what he does, and, you know, consistently one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet as well. So many of our heroes are getting older, and frankly, there's some of them that I think probably, you know, should think about retiring. But when you look at Alice and you hear Alice, he's still as good as he's ever been. He really is, if not better. It's crazy. So, you know, he's found a way. He really has found the eternal fountain of youth. It's amazing. That guy really is amazing.
He is. And you know what? I get it. I mean, you know, to be honest with you, I think as soon as you retire, like, that's it. I think it becomes the end of the road for a lot of us. And you and me might be in the same boat one day. You know, we'll get to that point and we go, well, retire. Like, why would I do that? And And I get it. I mean, look, I at 55 years of age, I am doing the exact same thing I did when I was 12 years old
Me
in
too.
The basement of the farmhouse, right? I mean, we're doing
same exact
thing.
Age, same exact thing. You're right. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, we are retired. I mean, again, I think we're fortunate that in some ways we've never really had to work a day in our lives because we've always just been doing something that's been very passionate to us. And you know, and I hate when people are like, oh, I'm going to work, but it's like, you know, I love that they call it playing music for a reason, you know, and there should be joy in it. It should bring you satisfaction. Obviously there's hard work involved and effort
sure.
and, you know, travel and whatnot, but you know, and schedules and that, but it's, you know, that was the whole point of it is like, look, you know, if I wanted to get a job, I'll just go work, you know what I
right.
mean? So I think you see that in guys like Alice, you know, and in particular, you know, you see a real joy in him. He's thankful. He gets to hang out with all of his friends and his buddies, making music. You know, I performed when his Alice Cooper Christmas Pudding event, which is the fundraiser for his charity,
right?
Out here, and he's just, you know, the last time I did it, I played bass for Rob Halford and I played bass for Alice. And Nita and Glenn Sobel from his band were there, Richie Faulkner. It was great having Edgar Winter point to me and say, hey, take a bass solo, you know. And it was just, you know, there we are we're all just friends hanging out, jamming and making music, you know. And it's, you know, standing there with the iconic guys that I grew up with and as well as my contemporaries, just standing there making me Slash was there and making music together. And it's no different than when we were all teenagers in high school jamming with our buddies. It really hasn't changed one bit.
No, it hasn't. And I forgot to ask you, things keep hitting me. How about KK getting ready to do his thing? You know, you were the catalyst for that, right?
It was, yeah. In fact, we talked about doing more with that, and KK just said, he goes, you know, I could tell, you know, leading into that event, and we went live on your show here, so you were there, and I mean, thank you for just opening that platform, because I think a lot of that was just, you know, getting KK just back up and going again, and again, he's like all of us, he's not gonna retire. I mean, he's KK down, you know, and it was so fun to just have him. He just kept getting more excited about that gig that we did in November at the KK Steel Mill that we talked about on air with you. And boy, once we got there and we did it, I mean, it was just an explosive moment. And it just, it, you know, people were calling it the gig of the year. It was so unexpected and so random. And it was just a perfect moment. And after we got off stage, as I was walking upstairs to the dressing room, I was walking right behind KK, and I said, Ken, you better get ready to pack your bags, buddy, because I think there's going to be more of that. The phone's going to be ringing. And he was just thrilled. He goes, oh my God, the energy of this night. This is an amazing band. And, you know, I think at some point we just had to decide, look, I've got a big year coming up with Megadeth, and I've got a lot of other stuff. And quite honestly, KK wants to work, man. I mean, he's ready to go.
Yeah.
And he's forever my friend. And I just said, listen, man, you ever want to share a song, share a stage, I'm always there for you in any way that we can. But otherwise, man, like, get going, man. You're like, now's your moment. And I'm happy and proud to just, you know, help a friend out to get back up on stage and get going and get rocking. And I'm proud of that night. I think it was good for everybody.
Well, it was. And it's given us him, you know, fully relaunched now. And I had figured that when you weren't part of when he announced KK's Priest, I had figured that you not being a part of it was pretty much driven by what we just spent the last 45 minutes talking about, which is, you know, your very busy schedule, whether it be with Megadeth and all your other stuff. So there's only one Mike Portnoy in this world that can do 15 bands at the same time.
Yeah, and again, you know, Ken, KK deserves to have his, you know, he deserves to call the shots and have his own path forward now. You know what I mean? He was in a big band for a lot of years, and this is his moment. And again, he completely has my blessing with it. And hey, if it comes a moment where we can do a show again or do some other stuff, it's anytime, you know, again, friends with friends making music, you know?
Well, we just covered a lot and a lot of good stuff in there. And I wish you well, be healthy, be safe there in Arizona. Everybody more information about all these things that David has just talked about, ellefsonyouthmusicfoundation.org. You've got the telethon. You've got the recording of Simple Truth, right? That's the song title.
Yep.
And right. you've got the School's Out event. So you got a lot going on. That's the best place to send everybody who may have just tuned in to find out about everything.
Yep, that's it. The ellefsonyouthmusicfoundation.org. That's the one.
Okay, so not the, just for the listeners, it's ellefsonyouthmusicfoundation.org. Go there, and then the general site for all of the products and different things, the coffee and all that. Where do people go for that?
Yeah, I mean, davidellefson.com has everything. If you want to go specifically to order some coffee so you can sit around and get nervous in your quarantine, that's ellefsoncoffeeco.com.
There you go. All right, man. Well, listen, it's always good to talk to you. You and your family stay safe, and I'll see you out there again soon, hopefully sooner than later.
Thanks. Likewise, Eddie, man. Good to chat. See ya.
Thanks, David.
Well, my thanks to David Ellefson, and earlier my thanks to Lizzie Hale, and of course, big thanks to you for listening to my podcast, which again, you can get every Thursday. New episodes, podcast1.com, Apple Podcast, and now free on Spotify. Follow on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, fan page on Facebook, and of course, the official online home is eddietrunk.com. You guys be well, be safe, be healthy. And I will connect with you again next Thursday for another all-new episode. Don't forget, Katie Irizarry, of course, as usual, puts the whole podcast together and is the producer. Have a great week, everybody. Catch you next Thursday for more interviews. I'll bring you Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony. That is a great one. You're going to love it. I'll get that up for you next Thursday. So look forward to that. And remember, check the archives. See if there's stuff you may have missed now that you're probably sitting around listening for things or looking for things to listen to. So be sure to have a look. All right. Have a good week.